Hey everyone, it's Fitz and welcome to Fighting Ever Fighting. Another episode is here as we work our way through the Kansas State football coaches, the new staff under Colin Klein. And today we've got offensive coordinator Sean Gleason, a very good discussion about his career, offensive philosophies, his quarterbacks, including Avery Johnson. And how did this guy from New Jersey end up in Manhattan, Kansas? It's an interesting discussion. I got to tell you, these are such likable coaches. I've enjoyed them so much. We're going to turn our attention to the basketball coaches here pretty soon. But Coach Gleason has kind of followed that assistant coach career move thing. You know what I mean? They hop from place to place. He was at Princeton for 10 years. He played small college football and ended up at Princeton. And 2 years as offensive coordinator there, his offenses put up huge numbers, not because of one steady system. As he points out, they basically ran two different types of offense his two seasons. Gets hired and goes to Oklahoma State, and that didn't work out. He goes back home to New Jersey at Rutgers, and then he starts bouncing around. And after 2 years in Missouri, he's here. And I think you're really going to enjoy this discussion. It's shows a lot about his personality, shows a lot about his history, and you're going to get a little bit of his coaching philosophy too. So now let's head up to the Veneer Football Complex and bring in Coach Sean Gleason. Now there he is, Coach Gleason from the Veneer Football Complex. Coach, thank you for joining us today. It's a day off. You came in to do this, man.
Yeah, no, it's important. Right on the top of the list with get my three sons a haircut. So it was a good deal. I'm happy to be here.
Don't ask me for barber references for something.
Yeah, you got that covered.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Well, how's things going at Kansas State?
Great. Yeah, I mean, sometimes in college football, we take these jobs on a whim. And, you know, I remember a couple interviews that I've had were not on site and ended up taking the job and kind of getting in the first day and seeing the lay of the land. And we did not, when I was in the Big 12 last, we did not play in Manhattan. We played in Stillwater. So I hadn't been here yet. So you're kind of jumping in with 2 feet. But since we've settled in, what a great staff and just a awesome place to raise a family. So we're thrilled. I just recently people have been asking me, like, you know, what's your take on Manhattan? I just can't give it enough positive reviews. So it's been awesome.
Yeah, it's a special place. It really is. And, you know, it kind of gets made fun of. I think Stillwater and Lubbock also do by other Big 12 institutions. But I'd live there, those three cities, a lot quicker than I would live a lot of other places in the country.
Yeah, there's that charm that of the people and some of the open space that you encounter that, you know, you can't duplicate it anywhere. So
Nope. Yep. You mentioned the staff. Did you know any of these guys, many of them, when you joined this staff?
Yeah, I mean, Colin and I kind of had some mutual connection. We spent, a couple people have asked me, like, we spent probably an extended time in the winter of just after the 22 season, hanging out at the coaches' convention, just a friend of a friend. Charlie Dickey was probably the closest bridge from myself to K-State and Coach Snyder and Colin. So we worked together that year that he came down to Stillwater, and he was just an awesome advocate for the place. And his family stayed behind actually for quite a while, Lisa and the girls. So we knew of the charm of Manhattan and just the quality of person. And Colin is what a great advocate of that, and is kind of the standard when it comes to that. So but really everyone else is kind of, with the exception of Joe Bob and just a couple of people that you bump into on the road recruiting. I was kind of like a lone wolf, so to speak. But I've done that before, so it wasn't too different than some other jobs.
Man, I love Charlie Dickey. What a great dude. What a good old boy. And when his wife and kids would come down on the sideline, she'd be in a fur or something. It was just unbelievable.
Just the energy is incredible. Yeah. Yep. I remember, you know, like most things, pregame, you'd walk down and there'd be fans there and you'd kind of get right on the crest of the stadium and some of the coaching families would always show up. And you know, you're kind of bubbling with excitement for the game.
Yeah.
And they would like virtually that whole crew would like tackle you as you're on your way into the stadium to get you wired right. So yeah, I love those people, the Dickies and Charlie's dear friend. So
you've kind of followed as of late the typical assistant coach wanderings. Spent some time at Princeton, and that's where you kind of made your name, and that led to the Oklahoma State job. But what was it like coaching there?
I would say there's actually quite a bit of overlap, you know, recruiting quarterbacks for, I was actually just talking to somebody this yesterday, recruiting quarterbacks for as long as I had, the Ivy League recruitment was actually a good precursor to quarterback recruitment, just of the rosters in the Ivy League are probably the most geographically diverse. So you get a chance to kind of bounce around the country and get in different places and make relationships in Oregon and Washington. And so that was a great preparation to some of these recent years when I was just shopping around, finding the best quarterback in the country. But being a Jersey guy, but being at the caliber of an institution in the Ivy League, it was kind of the best of both worlds. My dad was an hour north of us. My wife's family was an hour and a half south. So we were kind of smack dab in the middle, you know, raising our family. Between my time at Princeton and then coming back after Oklahoma State, we were in the same town for almost 10 years, which is kind of unheard of when you're raising a family. So whether it be doctors or schools, there was some permanence there for us. But I would say that some of the kids that I encountered there, I think of immediately a kid like Seth DeValve, who was a Browns draft pick. But he was a mechanical and aerospace engineer, played the guitar, played wide out at Princeton, but then transitioned to tight end in the NFL. Like, I mean, there's just some special kids. Quarterbacks, the last two quarterbacks that I coached there in 17 and 18 are, you know, stand out in my mind. So just a great place and great friends. So
your offense is the 2 years you're a coordinator, put up amazing numbers. What was the key to that success?
I think some of the continuity that we had, you know, I had been brought to Princeton by a guy that recruited me to Williams College, James Perry, who's now the head coach of Brown. And he was there for a few years before I got there. Although we were in close contact, I was only a drive away. So it was kind of like I was a junior member of the staff. And then working together with guys like Dennis Goldman and Andy Yarick, who through my 6 years there, we were together virtually the whole time. So taking over that year in 17 when James left to be a head coach at Bryant, there was a lot of momentum had been built, like with the things that we were doing and how we were doing it. Definitely put my own spin on the way that I would coach the players from some of the things that I would believe in. But yeah, we had a great bit of continuity, which I think allowed us in 17, we were a way different team than we were in 18. So 17, we broke the league passing record. You know, we threw for over 3,500 yards in 10 games. We lost 5 games by 7 points or less. We were undefeated the next year. So you could see kind of the beginnings of what should have been a really good team transitioning that next year. But the next year, you know, our quarterback rushed for 100 yards a game and passed for 200. So totally different style. I think we rushed for almost like 6.5 yards per rush in 18. So we were kind of like we threw it when we had to, but we were a juggernaut on the ground, which was fun.
Interesting. That kind of translates to what you're going to be doing here. Mm-hmm. Then you go to Oklahoma State. Mm-hmm. Now, I love Mike Gundy. He's a character. Kind of went out in flames, but we'll appreciate him for what happened. Here's my Gundy story I warned you about. Big 12 media days when they were having it in Frisco the first time around. So, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. Mm-hmm. I'm in the restroom. That's where this story's going. And Coach Gundy walks up next to me at the urinal next to me, and I look over, and there's that mullet.
Yep.
Coach, it took everything in my strength not to pet the mullet. Now, petting a man's mullet is not a good idea. No. In the bathroom while he's got something in his hand.
Something going on.
Idea.
Yeah.
And, I fought off that impulse. Thank you.
Yep, yep, yep. Well, he trimmed it a couple times, but it always came back, so.
Well, he was trimming the magic. Yeah. You know, he's got to keep that. Yep. And then you moved on. What led to all these changes that since the Oklahoma State thing that, you know, kind of went how it went. And then you moved on and ended up at Missouri. You're Rutgers in between, right?
Yep. Yep.
So
there was a draw to come home for sure. We had a great year in 19. Chuba Hubbard led the nation in rushing. I got to coach guys like Tylan Wallace and Spencer Sanders. Spencer Sanders was Big 12 Rookie of the Year that year. There was a couple of things, just like all of us have opportunity, but I come from a huge family, great aunts and uncles and cousins that were all regionally located in Jersey and New York and Connecticut. And, my wife's family at the time was going through some transition. Her dad had cancer, ended up passing from cancer. So we ended up going back to Jersey, excited at the opportunity to kind of create something from nothing, basically. But some of those family ties. And then as we've traveled since then, my wife calls it like getting in the covered wagon. Spent the year at Northwestern working with a guy, Mike Bajakian, who really started his career the same way that I did, coming from Williams College and working at Delbarton School, which is a private school in Northern Jersey, all boys Catholic school, and then moving on to, various jobs that he had in the SEC and the old Big East and the MAC and so on and so forth, working the NFL. So we were kind of a tag team duo that year, with a bunch of turmoil with Coach Fitz going through what he did. Won 8 games, won the bowl game in Vegas. And and then Mizzou came calling at kind of the right time when I was hungry to get into a league that I had never been in, help out Kirby Moore coaching the quarterbacks, who's now obviously going to be the head coach at Washington State. So working for drink. And it was really, really cool to kind of consume another offense. I say this sometimes about, like, I want on my gravestone that I helped quarterbacks, but the other thing is, like, that I scratched every itch as it related to finding out about offensive football. So being in another system and now being here with Colin, it's just it's been fun. I did think that going west would be more like Missouri, but I think we found like a little oasis here in Kansas that we're happy to be here.
What was Drink like? He's an interesting character. He's not out of central casting for a head football coach. He takes a little bit different approach.
Yeah. He's I think people, sometimes with Gundy, it was the same way. They're so adept at these one-liners that show up in a press conference or things that they do that draw some headlines. But one of the things I'll take away from Drink is just how hard a worker and how much he loved ball. But like, people don't really know that because they see the showman side of him, kind of like the circus ringleader a little bit. And I think that is a small piece of the pie and one that he knows how to deploy. But I think that he's a really good football coach, and he was in a ton of the offensive meetings, virtually every single one. We would have talked a lot about quarterback play with his background, coaching quarterbacks and calling plays. So I'm thankful for my time around him, especially thankful to be at Mizzou for those 2 years and see the league and win some games that people didn't think we could win, beating OU a couple years ago, and just some of the things that we did when injuries showed up or we were up against it that super proud of. So,
but what kind of experience you gain from 2 years in the SEC?
I just think that the work ethic that is bred because of the competition, your feet are to the fire every day. And I think the people that sometimes paint a narrative like college football is going in a weird direction, when you stand on that stump and say that to a crowd of people, you probably are going to get beat by someone who just has their hands in the mud, so to speak, and are just doing the job. And I felt like every day in the SEC, like, you needed to do the job or else someone was going to pass you by. And that's the one thing that I'll take from that league. Beyond the incredible following, we played at A&M 2 years ago, and it was like I thought the stadium was going to like collapse. It was shaking so much. We got our butt kicked, and Colin and I joke about that. But just incredible following, incredible stadiums, hyper-competitive. The one thing technically that I'll take, having been in the Big 12 and been in the Big 10 right prior to that, was I do think that it's a great hodgepodge of both leagues. I thought the speed in the Big 12 and the skill position player were a great caliber. The Big 10, the length and the size and the brutality of the play in the front. I thought the SEC was a great mix. Like, the linebackers at Alabama 2 years ago ran so well, but they were so long and so big. So I do think that that's kind of where I felt like maybe the leagues, the two I had been in prior, maybe overlapped a little bit.
Yeah, there's not many really big guys, particularly defensive tackles, that can run real fast. They almost all play in the SEC.
Yes, sir. Yeah. So, yeah, there's always a third down problem that you're trying to solve with one of those elite pass rushers. We dealt with one the last 2 years in practice with Zion Young, who was a second round pick to the Ravens, who was just incredible practice player, but you had to have a plan every day or else he was gonna wreck your practice. So
last year in Columbia, coaching quarterbacks, BKU.
Good. Yes, sir. KU, just so you know, on the record.
Keep that rolling. Keep that rolling because there's a little winning streak here. Mm-hmm. What led to this? How did this all fall in place for Sean Gleason?
I think whether it be business contacts or just connection to Colin and just really at this point in my career, excited to be working with either high caliber players or high caliber people. Here was like the best of both worlds. And Charlie would always talk about what a great place Manhattan was to raise a family, and my family's everything to me. So as I kind of looked out on the horizon of what it might be like to get in the coordinator's chair again, have some responsibility over, you know, pulling levers with the head coach, but be in a spot that had a great coaching staff, great players, and just real desire to win. Those elements combined to be like, that feels great for me, but it's going to feel great for my family because we're here to stay and we're here to raise three boys. So,
yeah, you know what? If you're going to go to a school, go with the new coach as one of the, you know, favorite sons of the program. And you know, he's going to get plenty of time. So you'll get plenty of time too, if you want it.
Yeah. The first day I got here, I thought it was a great omen. Cause I was like super excited to be here, but then all Colin's kids were here. Shannon was here. My kids were out in the field. It took about 1.5 seconds for them all to start tackling one another. And it was just pandemonium out there. So I was like, this is a good sign. We're in good shape.
That's awesome. There's so many kids bring such great energy to a facility like that. But correct me if I'm wrong, Colin's going to call the plays, correct?
Yes, sir. Yep. Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on that? For lack of a better word, that seems from a coordinator's perspective, a little emasculating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, to be quite honest, what I was doing last year and the year prior was not too different. You know, I wasn't calling plays at Mizzou, influencing the quarterbacks, but being in the room and on game day, another set of eyes that of a person that's called plays before, that's developed a game plan, that's made an impact on the game in so many different ways. So I just think that to me, instead of me worrying about what's next for my career, I just am interested here in supersizing what we have, whether it be on the offensive side with the quarterbacks or even for Colin handling some blind spots that, you know, as a head coach calling the plays, I know that there's some things that he's going to rely on me upon that, I'm hopeful to knock out of the park for him. So
I assume you'll be up top.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've done both. I've called it from upstairs and downstairs. I kind of feel somewhat obligated. The year that I was at Oklahoma State, I remember Gundy coming in and telling me he wanted me to call it from upstairs. And I had been on the field, you know, for the vast majority of my career calling plays. So I said, you know, I'd really prefer to be down. And he's like, well, I want you to go up. I said, every NFL coordinator that's any good is on the field, you know, making adjustments, talking to their guys. And he's like, yeah, I've already decided. And Jim Knowles is going up too. So I was like, I feel kind of bad about Jim Knowles having to go up to the booth as well. Cause
that's weird. Having a defensive coordinator up there is really tough.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, I'll be in the booth and I think that, there's merit to do the thing from the field, but I think, you know, our vantage point all week when we're watching tape is from that bird's eye view anyway. So I'm sure there'll be times where he'll be asked my opinion of things that I'm seeing. And I feel pretty qualified to do that. So
dogs are barking. How different is you trade being on the sidelines from being in contact with your guys, kind of having that player's view of the field, which let's be honest, isn't a great view.
Yeah.
Then you go upstairs where you're kind of global and seeing everything. How does that affect your play calling or thoughts on the game as it develops?
Yeah, I think that when I've been down before, the moments of leverage where you feel like the game's maybe swinging your way from like a physicality standpoint, you certainly feel those things like in a palpable way. Like you can see the three technique huffing and puffing. You can see some guys with their hands on their hips, and you can even sense the energy of your own team once they come to the sideline. Okay, we've got these guys. Or, but like, other than that, I think it is probably, you know, if you had a choice, if you were solely the coordinator, right? Colin's not going to be the head coach from the booth. But if you're solely the coordinator, I do think that being up top helps take you out of some of those emotional moments where you could otherwise get distracted being on the sideline, and you can kind of in a vacuum call the plays without some of that. I think it's beneficial to not have some of that stuff weighing you down, or kind of the ebbs and flows effect, and just what needs to be a surgical, calculated way of executing a game plan and getting things called. And seeing, you know, so many of us are trying to get into the right play, right? Because you only have 70 or so a game. So I think sometimes when you're upstairs, that lends itself to kind of like, whether it's carrying multiple calls and getting to the right one, or holding a formation out there when you see some sort of defense assemble, and then kind of getting it called the way that you want to get it called. Or so yeah, there's pros and cons, but I'm excited to have the role that I do.
So you're coming to K-State. You mentioned your last year at Princeton, you guys ran the ball quite a bit with your quarterback. Mm-hmm. You've got a running quarterback here, but how does what Colin do offensively maybe vary from what you did at Princeton?
I think there's a lot of overlap. I think one of the things Colin's incredible at, and when I first got here in the first few weeks, is the level of detail in the run game, just from, again, just to maybe bore you for a second with the way language has developed in college football. I know you mentioned JP was on here a little while back. When I listened to JP for a moment of his interview, he was talking about the revolution in the Big 12 of being in open formations and 10 personnel and up tempo. To make that move, all of us kind of had to take the hedge clippers out and basically pull off a lot of the architecture in the wording of our play calls. So some of that was beneficial when you want to snap it every 15 to 20 seconds, so you can get the guys assembled really quickly, but you lose a layer of detail, whether it be formationally and how you're going to direct runs, architecture that you can put on the back end to make it more challenging, whether it be kind of triple option related things that you would do or RPO. And I think Colin has done an incredible job of modernizing what would be an old school detailed run game. And that to me was striking when I first got here. And I said to a couple of my buddies, I'm like, how have I not had this language power in other jobs that I've been in? Because it so clearly explains how we're going to kind of do things from the foundation up. And yeah, I would say we've done a lot of the same things, but I think I'm excited about how the detail is going to translate into our guys being certain as to where they're going and how physical they can be, and with those sets of rules that they've been given.
Yeah, let's talk about your room a little bit. You inherited a veteran quarterback who has had good years and struggles, and but you've only had him for, 15 spring practices and meetings and being around him. What are your thoughts on Avery Johnson?
I think one of the things that I think sometimes when people say running quarterback or great set of legs, it's kind of like a soft way of saying that they're not a thrower or they're not cerebral. And I hope to alleviate everyone's concern in that, right? This kid is an A+ student of the game. He is a good thrower. And I'm excited to now bring what is unique about his game, which is I've never coached a kid as fast as him, but I probably have never had a kid who's as fast as him or close to it with the head and the arm together. I've had the legs, the arm, and not the head. I've had whatever version that you want to paint, but like, you know, and I hate to just use the name thing, but like when you walked in with Brady Cook, and he starts talking about his offense. So for instance, the Jets ended up taking him, right? Undrafted free agent. Well, the Jets were there at his pro day, not surprisingly, because they were hot on the trail trying to maybe decide if they were going to draft him later, if they were going to get him as a free agent. Well, when they get out of the meeting with Brady, they're like, wow, what a great processor, how articulate he is describing things that happened, calling up plays from 2-3 years ago with perfect detail. Like, those are all quarterback things that you want to hear about when you're doing a draft interview, whatever it is. And the type of player Brady was, that was the first thing that I said when I listened to Avery in the meeting room, because Christian's in there, I'm in there, Colin's in there at times, like I'm jumping in and out. Like, so when I first got in there, I was kind of just, I wanted to consume more than I wanted to instruct. And I was just amazed at how much it felt like Brady was talking with the amount of detail and the how succinct he was describing things. So we've got an incredibly smart quarterback, and one that I think probably because his set of legs is so unique that people don't give him enough credit for. So
I agree. And I don't think he's been used properly so far, mm-hmm. but we'll see. Colin knows how to use him. He mm-hmm. recruited him. So give me your thoughts on the rest of your room. You got some interesting guys in there.
Yeah. Yeah. All those guys had a great spring competing. They all had moments that you'd expect as underclassmen in their develop of kind of like some highs and lows, but we've gained, I think along with the whole program, we've gained a ton of ground just, in knowledge of the offense. And I think as far as we had kind of maybe a head start just because of Colin's time here past and maybe some of the similar names for things that carried over through the years. But I would say that in other takeovers or rebuilds, whatever you want to say, at the end of the first spring, we're past where I've been. So that's true of the quarterback room. It's true of the other position groups. And we're not a finished product, but we just got to keep going. So I think we're in good shape there.
Your young guys, one of your big duties has to be, we all expect Avery to move on. Maybe they'll bring the 5-for-5-year thing in. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Is to get someone ready. Where are you at with that?
I think we're in great shape. I think Christian did a really nice job. We had some candid conversations. So we had a quarterback battle at Mizzou going into training camp. We had a portal take, and we had a kid who had been returning but maybe not played as much as you'd want him to play. So we were kind of discerning through the whole training camp environment. And I talked to him a couple of things about rep allocation and how to make it a fair fight. But what is a fair fight? Everyone always thinks it's just, okay, repetitions with the twos or the ones being balanced out. But there's so many other factors, whether it be scrimmage environments where we called it versus it being scripted, right? That's the call it periods are more like the game. So those are better sample size and evaluation than if they were to go out there and just kind of be able to look over the scripted reps. So I felt like we left the spring and it was definitely allocated from a time perspective the right way. But I do think that we don't yet have a decision on, I know everyone wants to know kind of who the two quarterback is, but I do think that we're in a good spot to kind of now enter training camp and maybe exit training camp with a better idea. But both Dylan and Blake and Jacob, they were great consumers of the offense and all had great moments. So we're still a work in progress there.
This is probably the most important question I've asked you. Are Taylor Bratt and Jordan Peterson a problem when you put them together? Like separately, they're
yeah, oil and water is not really a great way to say it, but I was a English major, but I would imagine if I had a chemistry background, those two elements would not spontaneously combust somehow.
But it strikes me you're going to be in a very entertaining work setting.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So just to give you a perspective on how my last couple of days have gone for a guy from the East Coast. So I felt like somewhat better prepared to weather the tornado scare on Monday afternoon, which we were okay. Wasn't quite like the first time in Stillwater when we were in the storm shelter for way too long and our neighbor had to knock on the door and see if we were still okay in there. We could come out. So we handled that fine. But I'm in Garden City and Scott City yesterday. Okay, with these donor folks at a nut fry and talk about feeling like I was on Mars. So Taylor, of course, was in his element, kind of showing me the whole crowd and everything that was going on, and 70,000 cattle and how much each of them cost. And yeah, he was the one that goaded me into tasting one, which was, it went okay. My oldest son said, when I posed the question, should dad have a mountain oyster, he paused, and my two other sons were sitting next to him, and he said, well, you want Coach Klein to think that you're brave, right? And I said, yeah. I said, yeah. He goes, well, you better eat one. So I did. I didn't have two. I had one. But it was fun. So we had a great time. But Taylor was, talk about having fun. If JP was there, we might have been like riding bulls at the end of the night or something like that. So well,
that wouldn't have surprised me at all. Yeah. About 25 plus years ago, when I was starting this business up, drove out there to Scott City and went to the Nut Fry. It was awesome. People were awesome.
Great people, man. We had a fun time. So
the smell of Kansas gold was everywhere.
Yes. Depending on who you ask, gold for some people, manure for other people. So
yes. But I sat down at dinner and had a bite of one and said, that's not bad. And the guy next to me said, yeah, that's fish. So I never really had one.
They were kind of nestled right next to each other, so you didn't quite know which one you were eating at times.
I mean, let's be honest. It's not, right off the tree, so to speak.
Yes.
Or fried. I've never seen one before. I've never got an up-close look. So, Coach, welcome to K-State.
I had a blast.
Fantastic.
Man, I feel like I'm fully baptized now, so I'm good to go.
You are.
Tornado Nut Fry, same week.
Yeah, that storm was something else. The little ball back there is supposed to be lavender, but at post-storm, it doesn't want to be. So who knows? Coach, thanks for taking time for us today. And I appreciate you being here. And I'm so glad your family's enjoying Manhattan, Kansas.
Thank you.
We've been here now. I went to school here, then left. And we've been here since 1998, and I'm never leaving.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. You've done a great job. And this was fun. So thanks.
Thank you. That got a little crazy. The conversation was great. I had to stop it at one point, you might have noticed, because the dogs were going nuts. It's a fairly nice day here. They want to be in and out. The mower showed up. So we have some barking, we had some chaos, and we had a great discussion. I don't think anything could sum up an episode from the Cats and Dogs studio more than that. I hope you enjoyed it. Sean's a heck of a guy. It's different when you talk to coaches in a setting like a press conference as opposed to this. This was so much more relaxed, and I think his personality really came out. I enjoyed that a lot. We're running out of football coaches, and I've got a vacation coming up. Hopefully we'll get a couple in the can, and we're going to bring in some subs. That's right. I'm going to sit a couple out. I might do the open and close, though, so make it easy on them. As Brian Hanley's going to talk to someone, Cole Carmody's going to talk to someone, and I imagine Ryan Gilbert will do some of the basketball coaches. But I'll be back next week with another discussion with another K-State football staff member. Not sure who right now, but I'll figure it out. Thanks for watching, everybody. I'll talk to you real soon.
This has been a GoPowerCat.com and Spirit Street production.